I'm very happy now to welcome Captain Kathy Olszewski and Major Alan Belt of the Santa Fe Sheriff's Posse. Kathy is a 2014 recipient of the annual 10 Who Made a Difference recognition in the Santa Fe New Mexican. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So what is the Sheriff's Posse and what does it do?
The Sheriff's Posse is a group of volunteers, and we originally started with just horses, but now we've branched out into really all facets of the search and rescue community. We do four-wheel drive, we do ATV, and we also do what we call ground pounding. And we are actually under the direction of the state police, and they are the one that initiate a call out and then request whatever resources that they may need. And then we respond as we can.
And so what kinds of calls do you actually get? Like, what is a day like, some day when you are called by the state police?
Normally we get called around 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's when they've investigated, two to 4 o'clock in the morning. A missing person has come in. The state police will send an officer out. They will do an initial investigation, and then they will initiate the search. And then they call the statewide search commander, which is Bob Rogers, and then he will contact the incident commander that will be on call. Then at that point, he will go to someone who is doing our logistics, it's called the section chief, and tell them the resources that he's going to need immediately, say hasty teams, so they can go out and do a very fast search. And then from there, the logistics person will also call a section chief for planning and for operations.
Now, is this usually people who got lost in the woods kind of thing?
Typically, it's people that are lost in the woods. They've let their families know where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to come home, and they don't come home.
And so why do the calls tend to come at 2 to 3 in the morning?
Because of the person calls 911, they're referred to state police. State police, as Alan said, sends out an officer who makes sure that it's a valid reason to make a call out. And so typically people would start getting worried about dark. It all takes time.
Yeah. And so then what do? You get on your horses at 3, 4 a.m.?
Normally what happens is we are notified by the logistics section chief that what resources we need. And then we have what we call calling trees. And we have three different people in our group that they're each notified, and then they call the people from there, and then we see how many people we can field.
And so you might have a half a dozen people out because
yes.
You know more or less where the person was or was supposed to be.
It's the last point they've been seen.
Now, what are the advantages of being on horseback?
Well, for one thing, we can move faster, typically. If it's open terrain, we can see further. To me, the most valid point for having us out there is that we can move faster than most ground pounding teams can.
Ground pounding means you're on foot.
We're on foot.
Now, can you see enough to rescue before the sun comes up?
We typically are called out to be there at first light.
Oh, okay.
And there are teams that will go out at night. But typically, we're called out to be out there at first light because ultimately the incident commander is responsible for his people out there, their safety. And inherently, it's kind of dangerous to be out at night. And I think typically more dangerous for somebody on horseback if they're not familiar with the terrain, because maybe the horse can see the fallen log with the big deep hole at the other side of it, but the rider can't.
Yeah, I mean, even as you're out there trying to save other people who are in danger, you have to keep yourself safe.
That is the ultimate responsibility of the team, is to keep themselves safe, but yet go out and do the job.
So what are the safety precautions that you guys take?
Well, I want to go back just one bit there. Normally, when we have the first thing in the morning like that, those were the hasty teams will go out and they will do a rapid search of the immediate area. And
now, does that tend to usually be when you find people?
Many, many times by the time we actually get there, they've had a find and things, or they'll call us off before they get there, because many times they're very close to their vehicle or the last point they were seen. But what the logistics person will do is they'll gear up to have the bigger force show up at first light if needed, and that way it gives the planning section chief and time to look over the whole thing, and what they'll do is they'll break up the terrain or the area, and then they'll send individual teams into each area to start looking
to do a more thorough search.
Yes, to do thorough searches, and some of these will go into multiple operational periods. They can go 2-3 days, 4 days.
So in those searches, what are you doing? Are you calling the person's name? Are you using sniffing dogs? I mean,
well, there's all different ways to do a search. So typically, people on horseback or ground pounders, they're going to stop every maybe 10 or 15 minutes. They're going to call out the person's name. They're going to blow a whistle, and they're going to stop, not make any sound themselves, and listen. Then as it gets more involved, we may start doing line searches, actually looking for clues, things that were dropped, tracks. People may be sent out to track if they find tracks. They may send dogs out, live scent dogs that are air scenting and so on.
Now, in the movies, you sometimes have the indigenous tracker, whether it be Australian or Native American or whatever. Are there trackers now? Are there good trackers?
Yes, we do. We have training. I've been through a couple of them already, and we're building team members from around the state. We're not just one. There's many, many search and rescue teams. There's three or four right here in Santa Fe, and some of them specialize more in high angle, somebody that's trapped on a cliff. Others are ground pounders, they're avalanche rescues, all sorts of different things. We're just one part of a large group. And they're developing trackers throughout the state, and they have ongoing training, and they're getting very, very good. I wouldn't say like the movies, but
Now, what do you learn when you learn the skills of a tracker?
When you're tracking, you learn to look for any kind of a displacement. Some of these guys, they can track you on concrete. They notice that, and these are people that have been doing it for years and years and years. They're
How
the ones that are
How on earth can somebody track you on concrete?
I can't do it yet.
Displacement of pebbles.
Pebbles.
Just things like that. I took the tracking class, or at least the beginning tracking class myself. And like all things, there's some people that are just way more proficient at it.
Yeah.
And it's like most things in life, you either use it or you lose it. And the people that continually work at it and stuff, you start to see things. You start to see the grass laying in a different direction. You start to see minor disturbances in pebbles and rocks. And, I've had experience tracking over rock. And that's what you're looking for, maybe the wet side of a rock that's flipped up. So that's been something recent. A lot of little things.
A rock that's just been moved so it's not laying in its rock bed.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of the main reasons that people get lost in the first place?
Oh, gosh.
There are many reasons. Many reasons they go out, and it's very easy, especially up in the mountains, to get totally disoriented. You lose your directions, and they go out ill-prepared. They don't have a compass. They don't have a GPS. They think they're just going to go out for a short little walk, and so they're not dressed for it. They don't have any survival, water, matches, anything like that. And they get disoriented, and then they just start walking. And they just more than likely end up further and further away from where their original point was.
It is easy to get into the mountains where there's a lot of tree cover. If the sky is overcast like this and you don't get that feeling for where the sun is at, it's easy to just totally get disorientated and not know where north is. It's incredibly easy.
Now, what happens if you are lost in the mountains and you decide, I'm just going to go downhill? Does that not work? I mean, do you not eventually get to the bottom of the mountain and therefore to safety?
What if it was easier to go a mile uphill to find your place? You know, it's if you don't have the proper clothing and you don't have the proper survival gear, matches, flashlight, you can succumb. Yes, thank you. To hypothermia. Yeah. I mean, that's what gets a lot of people.
And it's amazing when you go up on what's a warm day in Santa Fe and you go up to the top of the mountain and it's really cold.
Correct.
Amen.
Yeah. One of the best things, you know, if you go out and you do get lost, one of the best things to do is stay put, try to get to an open area or someplace and lay out markings of any sort, you know, excess clothing, sticks, anything, so that you'll be more visible from the ground and the air, because we also use air resources for searching.
Meaning helicopters?
Yes. And planes.
Yeah, planes. Many times the planes are used. They're called a high bird to relay radio traffic, because radio traffic is line of sight, and so where the incident command base is, they may not be able to talk to teams in the field, so they'll use the Civil Air Patrol, and they will relay traffic. We'll set up a relay station at the top of a mountain on the ground, and then we have comms people that will go there and relay traffic to the different teams. So we try to have very, very good communication so that everyone always knows where everyone is at.
We're talking to Major Alan Belt and Captain Kathy Olszewski of the Santa Fe Sheriff's Posse. What's it like when you find somebody who's lost?
It hasn't been my experience yet. I mean, I've been part of a lot of searches, and you go into the field knowing you're probably not going to be the person that actually finds them.
It's, you know, when we find someone, everybody is relieved and excited, you know, especially when we find them and they're alive, and it's just a big relief, and we feel... And we work as a team. It doesn't matter who finds the person, because if you're not the one, you're still eliminating areas. And we work as a team, so we all find that person. And it's very rewarding. That's why people do it, because there's no, you know, remuneration, pay, whatever, that's involved with this. It's all volunteers.
Yeah. Now, what is each of your backgrounds? How did you get into this work?
I was coerced. By a previous member, you need to do this, and so I did, and I got interested in it, and
but I mean, were
progressed.
You a horseman? Were you in law enforcement?
No. I'm a salesman, and you know, most of the people involved in this come from all walks of life. You know, government workers, salespeople, construction workers, you name it. It's just they like to be outdoors, and they feel that urge to help.
What about you, Kathy?
I'm a horse person. I was involved in a sheriff's posse out in California, and when I moved out here, I wanted that same camaraderie, and so I joined that group, which was primarily a search and rescue group. And so, you know, by default, I became a search and rescue person.
So how do you practice? Because for something like this, you might get a bunch of calls together. You might not get a call for a while. So how do you keep in practice, and how do you keep your horses trained to do what they need to do?
Now, as far as the horses, as our sheriff's posse stands, we qualify horses every year to make sure that they're suitable for search and rescue and suitable. We also sit in a lot of parking lots. That's part of our fundraising effort to keep the posse going. So we make sure that they're safe to be around the public. As far as training for search and rescue, we as the posse do a lot of map and compass classes. We do a GPS course every year.
We have what we call mock searches numerous times throughout the year. Sometimes we'll do it on our own, and many times we'll also do it as teams around the area and the state. And so we'll have a full-blown, we'll send somebody out to get lost. And then we go out and try to find them. And we run from an incident commander through the section chiefs, through everything like that, so we all stay on our game.
The people who are lost, are the majority of them found alive and in good enough condition that they go back to their lives as,
yes,
as usual?
Yes. Yes. In fact, some people end up walking out on their own. Some people are not that far. They're just disoriented, and they've done the smart thing. They've stopped, maybe built a fire, and we can find them rather quickly.
So building a fire is actually a smart thing to do because you'll be able to see it, hear it, and smell it.
That, and it'll keep you warm during night. Just try not to burn down the forest.
Yeah, try not, ladies and gentlemen, to burn down the forest. What do people tend to need when you find them?
Usually water, you know, because they're dehydrated, and blankets or something because they're going to be hypothermic. And so, you know, and just that. And at times, you know, most times they can walk out. At times we've had to take them out on horseback where the rider will get off and let the person ride out on the horseback. And if need be, we can send in medical assistance. We have litters that can be carried, or there's like a wheel thing. I don't know what it's called off the top of my head, where they can roll someone out. It's not very comfortable, but
yeah.
But we can get them out, and we take great pains, you know, if someone's injured, to treat the wounds. We have medical responders that will go out and take care of them and get them back to where they can then be moved out by an ambulance.
So you also work with, one thing that you know how to do is show people how to evacuate animals in case of emergency.
Correct.
What is that about? What does that look like?
You know, it's still kind of in its infancy. There's a lot of horse people out in the Santa Fe area that don't have trailers. So, you know, that was probably would be something that you should get Eldon or other people that are way more involved in that
we
than
we are.
We have
people that are, we have like, there's a list out there of people with trailers that have signed up that will help. Once they've evacuated their horses, they'll come back in and help move other animals and livestock out of, a burn area.
It's something, fortunately, that we haven't had to do yet.
Yeah. Right, but in case of, for example, wildfires or other kinds of emergencies.
I think in the Los Alamos fire years ago, some of our older members that have been there a long time, they actually went up and helped retrieve some animals for people.
So you also participate in parades and in rodeos and other cultural events in town, and that gives you a certain visibility.
Yes, ma'am. And like Kathy said earlier, about the only way we fund ourselves is through parking. We do a lot of parking for Museum Hill, do other organizations, and they donate to us, and we assist them with a lot of traffic. If you know Museum Hill, it's pretty congested up there, and when they have a major event, they call upon us to help park the cars and
yeah, it's assist. A convoluted parking situation up there. So
at best.
So when they have like major openings or when they have major events like Day of the Dead, they get us out there and we, you know, stop traffic and, you know, ask them if they're going to Museum Hill. And if they are, then you need to park at this parking lot or that parking lot. And we're cramming cars in there as tight as we can.
And everybody probably wants to look at your beautiful horses.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of us are on horseback and others are on foot.
So how does the organization support itself?
Well, we have to thank the Museum of Folk Art.
Yes.
Because they have been one of the people or one of the groups that have done a major job of supporting us through the years.
Yeah, through the parking like that, we have very minimal membership dues. But that's about, you know, and any kind of a donation that might come in. Some of the people, like, have in-kind donations, I think, from Los Alamos and things like that. You know, we're always looking for donations.
And you have a website, SantaFeSheriffsPosse.org, and I will link to that on my website. So what keeps you going? I mean, you both have been doing this for a while. What keeps you going as a volunteer?
If somebody else doesn't do it,
yeah, it won't get done.
It won't get done. So it has to be us.
There are volunteers out there that work for United Way, for the Boy Scouts, for all the different things, you know. It's just, you know, try to give back as much as you can.
Put our horses to good use.
Yes.
Yep. Captain Kathy Olszewski is a 2014 recipient of the annual 10 Who Made a Difference recognition in the Santa Fe New Mexican. Major Alan Belt is with us also. They're both part of the Santa Fe Sheriff's Posse. Once again, SantaFeSheriffsPosse.org. Anything else you want to let people know before we go?
Whenever you go out into the woods or the wilderness or the forest, whatever you want to call it, take along just a few basic things, maybe a compass or a GPS, some water, maybe a way to start the fire, and some extra clothing. You know, you can always take it off.
And I might add a whistle.
Yes, a whistle.
Ah, very interesting.
So when you're out there whistling for people, they can hear you versus your voice. If you're, like, been disabled or feeling ill, you're just not going to have the volume. So blowing a whistle.
You know, there's this old-fashioned thing that some people may not know about called a map.
Yes.
I used to really like maps, and whenever I used to go hiking, I would always carry a map and then try to figure out where I was in relation to that
right.
map. GPS doesn't always work. You don't always have connection.
Right. No. You're in a heavily wooded area, and if you can't see the sky, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
And in many valleys, depending on, you know, if you're in a large valley, you may not get reception. That's where it's always good. Don't rely totally on the GPS. A map and a compass is always going to work.
Yeah. Now, are you both hikers and outdoors people yourself?
I do some hiking, but I'm basically a horseback rider. So,
yeah.
You know, a GPS is one of those things that takes a while to learn. So, you know, if you decide to go out for a hike and grab a GPS, you know, and you don't know how to use it, and I think we had a search several years ago where somebody had a GPS and didn't know how to use it and got out there and got lost.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to know how to turn it on and mark your position.
Mark your position.
Marking your position is key.
And yeah. allowing it to attain all its satellites so it knows where you're at when you mark your position. It's a little bit more complicated than a lot of people understand.
Right. If they just mark their vehicle when they go out, then they'll always, you know, have an indication where to get back.
One thing that I was sort of shocked to see the other day was a kid, a teenager, walking in the woods with a headset on, listening to music.
Hmm.
I thought, you know, you're in the woods, kid. You know?
Not just kids. We've had searches for adults that have gone out for a walk with the headset on, got distracted, and then all of a sudden they don't know where they're at.
Yeah.
And so it's not just kids. There are adults out there with the same issue. I would think just unplug for a minute and just listen to the sounds around you.
Well, listening to the sounds around you is kind of a music of its own.
Yes.
And not only that, but listening to the sound of your own breath and the sound of your own heart, which you hear, especially if you're walking fast enough.
Right. Or you're climbing.
Yeah. Climbing hard enough.
Well, I want to thank you again both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, Captain Kathy Olszewski and Major Alan Belt.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate the opportunity.